Good morning. I bring you greetings from Amosville, Virginia, and my farm, Elysium. Amosville is a little map dot on US 211, conveniently located 60 miles between Washington, D.C. and Paradise. This is a rather inauspicious time today because even though I was actually ordained on February 29th, leap day of 2004, practically speaking, this is the 11th anniversary of my ordination. It's my pleasure to be able to spend it here at my home church. My piece is entitled Paradigm is More Than 20 Cents, Part 2. Now, prior to commencing with the examination of the spiritualist paradigm vis-a-vis demonic possession and the practice of exorcism, I'll provide a brief summary of last month's piece when last I spoke, so that if you hadn't been here or hadn't listened to the recording online, then you won't be left in the dark. Most of the world's religions since antiquity have made reference to demons and demonic possession. The Assyrians, Babylonians, and Chaldean texts, among others, have written of these otherworldly dark forces, often aligned with and sharing common cause with a chief or central dark figure, such as Satan in the Christian tradition. Research also indicated that various names have been ascribed throughout the time to these demonic creatures, with one source listing over 200 such names. These spiritual creatures reportedly seek to influence or otherwise harm those with whom they come in contact. Those unfortunates may reportedly suffer from temptation, external physical pain, possession, obsession, infestation, and subjugation. The documents show that there are several indicators of demonic invasion, which include, but are not limited to, loss of appetite, speaking, understanding, an unknown language, divination, unnatural body postures, and supernatural physical strength. As you saw me walk into the church this morning and slip, you saw one of those unnatural body postures, but I assure you that it wasn't because of the obsession. Those who describe to the belief in demonic possession turn to the use of exorcism as a weapon used against the demonic influence, particularly regarding cases of demonic possession. The Catholic Church employs the rite of exorcism, revised 1999, as its primary form of spiritual combat to liberate the unfortunate from demonic possession and influence. By the 1960s, exorcism was viewed as an anachronism, and its use was seldom. However, since then, its employment has skyrocketed. It was revealed in last month's talk that the Vatican has a chief exorcist, the Reverend Gabriel Amorth, has claimed to have performed in excess of 160,000 such exorcisms during his lengthy career. Another storied Catholic exorcist, Father Vincenzo Tarbarelli, reportedly performs as many as 100 exorcisms per week. The Vatican is actively recruiting and training a multidisciplinary team of clergy, psychiatrists, sociologists, doctors, and criminologists who detect and to meet the increasing need for exorcisms. It was also noted in last month's talk that the Protestant denominations also employ an exorcism process, usually referred to in terms of spiritual warfare, to combat this demonic possession. Now, one such practitioner claims to have performed 20,000 exorcisms in the past 40 years, and he offers a one-hour Skype exorcism for the modest amount of U.S. dollars, $295, which is about £188.37 at today's exchange rate. Now, last month's piece concluded with mention made of the growing popularity of the occult and Satan worship in particular, and reference was made to the recent celebration of a Black Mass by a satanic group held in a public building in a conservative Midwestern state. It now becomes necessary to examine the spiritualist paradigm pertaining to the reported existence of demons, demonic influence, and the applications of spiritual warfare to combat this negative influence. Now, while spiritualism is without dogma and creed, and refreshingly so, it is also absent an overarching sacred text on par with the Bible, Quran, or Talmud, through which spiritual teachings are contained and passed through successive generations of believers. However, while we draw on those sacred texts as necessary, we're free to research the Bible and the Quran, the Talmud, and any other sacred texts of the world's religions. We can also rely on great spiritual thinkers such as Sir Arthur Conan Doyle and Mr. Arthur Findlay to broaden our understanding by addressing spiritual matters incompatible with denominational thought. Additionally, trance mediums working under spirit control have provided additional insight and information to help complete our understanding. So even though we don't have an overarching text, we're not without our thinkers in our who impart wisdom. While denominationalists consider demons to be entirely spiritual beings that have never lived a physical existence on the earth plane, the spiritualist paradigm generally considers all spirits to be the non-corporeal form of previously earth-dwelling beings. We, as spiritualists, don't even accept that there is anything in our understanding that had not previously been in the physical plane. We do not recognize or accept the fact or the premise, mind you, the premise that a spirit could exist in an otherworldly dimension without having first being incarnated. Now, perhaps this understanding is a natural result of our quest to prove the personal survival of the individual through evidential mediumship obtained by spirit communication from a person known to the sitter. Now, there is a possible exception to the previous statement I made in that the third principle of the Spiritualist National Union's principles recognizes, and I quote, the communion of spirits and the ministry of angels, end quote. A brief explanation of this third principle found on the official Spiritualist National Union website states, the ministry of angels brings enhanced wisdom to enlighten the individual, society, and the world in which we live. Now, the SNU, while recognizing the existence of angels for their inspiration, guidance, and healing, similar recognition is not accorded to their antithesis, demons. There is no equivalent understanding present in the National Spiritual Association of Churches Declaration of Principles regarding spiritual beings without prior incarnation into the earth plane. From the NSAC perspective, both demons and angels are outside their frame of reference. Again, we focus and understand, and this is knowledge passed on from our great spiritualist thinkers like Doyle and Findlay, and through trance mediums, that any spirit with which we deal, any spirit with which we encounter, has previously existed on the earth plane, thereby making the concept of demons, which have never been incarnated, out of our frame of reference. Now, spiritualism was in the vanguard of religious thought that recognized that personal responsibility and ones living in accordance with natural law were critical to the good and just life. Spiritualism not only rejected the notion of eternal damnation, but also that of an afterlife of eternal torment in the underworld populated by demons under the aegis of Satan. Now, denominationalists would declare that bad things resulted from the actions of Satan, while spiritualists hold the individual accountable for any negative consequence or occurrences. Spiritualists understand that negative consequence results from bad choices rather than evil influence. Now, we do recognize the law of attraction is a double-edged sword in that it not only can attract positive, but also negative influence and consequence. if we choose to associate with negative people engaged in bad behavior, the negative consequence is likely to result. So we always want, if we want to draw good things to us, if we want to draw good people to us, we must engage in good behavior, good conduct, because as the Greek philosopher said, birds of a feather flock together. So we don't think if anything bad happens to us that it's the machinations of Satan. It's that we're not living in accordance with natural law. I just want to make sure that everyone understands that. While the denominationalist may classify the phenomena listed, such as divination, to be evidence of demonic possession, many of those very indicators were also embraced by denominationalists as spiritual gifts. See Corinthians 12, 1 Corinthians 12. In other words, some of the indicators of demonic possession are divination, speaking an unknown language, which 1 Corinthians 12 embraces those spiritual gifts, and that we embrace as spiritual gifts in the spiritualist church. We regard such phenomena as divination, speaking, understanding an unknown language, or levitation as examples of physical mediumship. While denominationalists may view speaking in a known language as being evidence of demonic possession or influence, we naturally view it as a phenomena of glossolalia. Levitation is also described as being another such indicator of demonic possession, allowing the possessed to defy the normal laws of physics. However, levitation has reportedly been proven through demonstrations of physical mediums operating under spirit control. Mr. D.D. Hume, perhaps the most renowned and most researched of the spiritualist physical mediums, was noted for his demonstration of levitation. I've read reports that were witnessed by many people of him being able to levitate himself, go out the window of the home in which he was demonstrating, physically go over the top of the roof line, come down the opposing side and in through the opposite window and back to where he was. And this was done in broad daylight in front of many witnesses. That's Mr. D.D. Hume. The website parapsychologyinfo.com provided several interesting theories relating to levitation postulated by various researchers. Among them, the investigator Dr. W.J. Crawford, who examined levitation phenomena of one Kathleen Gulliger. Dr. Crawford wrote that the levitation was affected by psychic rods of ectoplasm emanating from the medium, which found leverage in the medium's body, acting as cantilevers. So parapsychologists have also been studying the phenomena of meditation, and they came up with this scientific explanation. And other theories ascribe the willful alteration of the medium's physical weight as being the mechanism through which levitation was possible. But again, we embrace these physical phenomena. We have studied these physical phenomena for the last 150 years. To us, it is an expression of the power and glory and magnificence of spirit. These are, as I think, God-given abilities that each of us have, and not a manifestation of some evil person, evil one. I see that the spiritualist paradigm is wholly inflexible with regard to the matter of demons, demonic possession, and exorcisms due to our rejection of Satan and spiritual beings without existence, with the exception noted above, as in the Spiritualist National Union's Ministry of Angels. We also acknowledge that what might be perceived as a spiritual attack, a temptation, pain, obsession, may actually be the result of a life lived incongruent with natural law. We further understand that indicators of possession may actually be naturally occurring demonstrations of physical mediumship. In conclusion, one final point is offered for your consideration. Before the Catholic Church will sanction the rite of exorcism, all other medical and psychological causes must be eliminated before approval is granted. Only those cases defying medical, psychological explanation are considered to be indicative of a spiritual malady. Given that these approved cases reflect only a rather small percentage of the total number of cases, one can only imagine the huge number of requests for exorcism received in investigation annually by Vatican officials. Now, it is possible that a very small percentage of the cases investigated neither have medical, psychological root causes, nor are directly attributable to demonstrations of physical mediumship. And if so, what would be the effect on the spiritualist paradigm? Are we so locked in by our spiritualist understanding that we are doctrinally unable to recognize the existence of a spiritual force outside our current realm of understanding, should that spiritual force actually exist? Should the spiritualist paradigm be examined in such a manner that would afford the opportunity to broaden our understanding should the need arise? We also realize that when someone leaves the earth plane, when a spirit goes across that thin veil, that they aren't always gifted with good intent and a expanded, enlightened view, that if they were involved in negative behavior here on the earth plane, they would seek out and find other people currently engaged in that behavior here and try to make that problem worse. But since we have rejected the eternal damnation, rejected the personification of evil, we can find a more proper and correct understanding of these phenomena that are affecting some and recognized in other manner by the denominationalist churches. I'll just leave that with you with God's blessing. And thank you for allowing me to serve you this morning.